Good morning, my friends, and welcome to another installment of Weekend Update. From very high above all the puerile and pedantic forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. The last podcast before my elk hunting adventure. It's something we do every year. We take a week and go up to the cabin. Well, not exactly a week. It's usually like 4 or 5 days. And wait for elk to walk by. That's what I do anyway. So the plan while I'm gone is I'm going to replay a couple of really good episodes for Monday's program and Wednesday's program. And then I'll be back for Weekend Update. Hopefully with stories of how I knocked down a giant bull elk. The truth is, in my entire life, I've only had 2 bull permits. All the rest of them have been cows. And the truth is, I've never even shot an elk. So, hopefully, a giant bull elk runs by me and I can knock it down. That brings up an interesting point. If somebody is against hunting, then really, they're against wildlife. That's absolutely true. If hunting is not allowed, then species are allowed to overpopulate, and when that happens, disease runs wild in just about all animal populations. Have you ever heard somebody say, never eat a rabbit until the first hard frost? Well, the reason for that is rabbits carry this little bug called tularemia. It's transmitted by fleas, and it's a really nasty disease if you actually get a case of it. Well, anyway, if you pay attention to rabbits, their population kind of booms and busts. There'll be a year where there's rabbits everywhere, and then all of a sudden, the next year, you'll hardly ever see a rabbit. That's because the population gets too high, and then the tularemia gets transmitted throughout the rabbit population, and there's a big die-off. The same holds true for other animals. Ungulates, that's deer and elk and antelope, they get chronic wasting disease. Fish get whirling disease. And we people get the stupid disease. But that one is not quite as lethal as I sometimes wish it were. In all seriousness, though, it's absolutely true with wildlife. When the population gets too high, there's a disease that goes through and it wipes out a whole bunch of them. And so, what we do to mitigate the widespread disease die-offs is we manage the population. We thin them out with hunting. And so, if you're against hunting, then you must be in favor of cute deer and elk and rabbits dying a grisly death from some real nasty disease. And so, if you're against hunting, first of all, you've got your head up your rear end, but second, you're in favor of all sorts of animals dying a really grisly death that you could have prevented but didn't because you were worried about your own personal feelings. Hopefully, next week, I'll be able to do my part in preventing a beautiful elk from dying a really terrible death. And if all goes well, I'll have a whole bunch of tasty steaks to pack into my freezer for the rest of the winter. According to Outdoor Life, there are 3 main arguments that anti-hunting groups use, and you've probably heard all of them. The first one is that trapping is cruel. And it's always accompanied with a picture of the stereotypic coyote who's chewing his leg off because he's been caught in a trap. As far as wildlife management goes, trappers are really kind of like the canary in the coal mine for wildlife management. Usually, as the fate of trappers goes, so inevitably does the fate of hunting and other wildlife management tools. Several states have outlawed trapping. Just recently, New Mexico passed Roxy's Law, named for a dog killed in an illegal trap, of course, that ended all trapping on public land in the state. California has also banned recreational trapping, and Washington, Colorado, Florida, Hawaii, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Rhode Island have done away with leg-hold traps. Now, what these anti-trappers don't tell you is that in addition to helping manage all wildlife, trapping currently protects private property, societal infrastructure, the food supply, and also helps recover endangered species. But there's one other big one. They help prevent disease. Most of the trapping that goes on is not for larger animals. It's for varmints and other small nuisance animals, like raccoons. Yeah, I get it. They're kind of cute and they're pretty intelligent. But the big problem with raccoons is They carry a lot of disease, the big one being rabies. And you might not think it, but in states that produce a lot of corn, a big population of raccoons can decimate a cornfield. And by the way, if you like your pets, you probably don't want them anywhere near a raccoon. Raccoons kill all sorts of household pets, namely cats, but they'd make a mess out of just about any dog, and then there's the whole problem of the raccoon giving your pet rabies. But one of the biggest species that are managed by trapping, and you probably wouldn't even give this one a second thought, are beavers. They're primarily managed through regulated trapping, which would cost the taxpayers more than $32 million a year just to keep up with acceptable population levels. The damage they currently cause to bridges, roads, irrigation systems, and private property would add millions to the tab. Just think about the damage a beaver would do to your city park. But like I said, the biggest problem with smaller mammals, mainly varmints, is disease. According to that Outdoor Life article, just controlling rabies among fur bearers costs more than $450 million a year, according to a 2005 study. And it's estimated that in the absence of trapping and hunting, that cost would increase to nearly $1.5 billion annually. And of course, the big tear-jerker argument against trapping is that you'll catch these poor endangered species and domestic cats and dogs. But in that same 2005 study, various traps were set over a quarter of a million times. Not one single threatened or endangered animal was caught. And the whole domestic dog and cat thing? During the study, not a single domestic dog or cat was captured. Kind of blows a hole in that argument, doesn't it? Pun intended. Let's take a quick break before I tell you about the next big argument that these tree-hugging commie pinkos use to try to take your hunting rights away. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. I don't know if you've realized it or not, but that white crap is about to be flying around, and that expensive boat you bought for your summer, well, it's about to be covered up by a gigantic snowdrift and sit full of snow for the entire winter. You know what's going to happen to it then? Well, it's going to melt a little bit and then refreeze and then melt a little bit and then refreeze. And in the spring, when you want to go fishing, there's going to be a hole in the bottom of it. You could prevent all this unpleasantness from happening just simply by calling Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. Their phone number is 307-674-2532. They are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. So if you've got a whole bunch of expensive playthings that really ought to live inside of a metal building, then give Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings a call. Again, their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out at their website at mortonbuildings.com. There's a lot of people that want to move to our great state. And if you've got a piece of property that you're interested in selling to them, then you need a real estate agent that you can trust. That agent is Rebecca Bechtel at Compass Real Estate. Last year, she sold around $25 million worth of property. And get this, she's been known to talk people out of buying a piece of property simply because it didn't fit their needs. So if you're interested in selling your property, or if you're looking to buy something else, you should definitely give Rebecca a call. Her phone number is 307-699-3519. One more time, Rebecca's phone number is 307-699-3519. My friends, it's Saturday. And do you know what that means? Hot wings from the Wing It Food Truck. They make the most incredible wings in the state of Wyoming. I personally recommend the garlic parmesan wings. They're incredible. They have several other different flavors, and all of them are amazing. Now, the way that you can figure out where that truck is going to be is go to their Facebook page, The Wing It Food Truck, and you'll find their weekly schedule there. That way, you can plan your entire week around where that truck is going to be. That's The Wing It Food Truck. And now, back to all the dumb arguments that tree-hugging commie pinkos use to take away your hunting privileges. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, David Iverson, exuding excellence in conservatism with every episode. Before the break, we were talking about an article in Outdoor Life that discusses the main arguments that the tree-hugging commie pinkos make against hunting. The next big one that all of them seem to gravitate towards is that hunters kill endangered and threatened species. On face, this one is a no-brainer. The vast majority of outdoorsmen are responsible, law-abiding citizens. And even if they weren't, shooting an endangered species is already against the law. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Wyoming Game and Fish police this one pretty closely. Years ago, there was a former official of the Wyoming Game and Fish that had an eagle that had been killed mounted. At his home in Casper, he had a dome built in the roof so he could display the eagle. It was actually pretty neat. I remember being in school and the bus driver taking us by his house so we could see the eagle. The problem being that even possessing an eagle feather or a talon or any part of an eagle is very, very illegal. And the former Wyoming Game and Fish redshirt knew that. He was caught, prosecuted, paid a hefty fine, and if memory serves, he may have even done some jail time over it. So the shooting or collecting of endangered species is already against the law and could hardly be used as an argument against legal hunting. And then there's the larger point. Everyone ought to agree that we have to protect endangered or threatened species. Or should we? The Endangered Species Act has long been used as a bludgeon against the states. However well-intended it may have been, now it has very little to do with science. Under previous and the Biden administrations, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is filled with bureaucrats who have no background in science, wildlife, or management of any sort. Among the many issues that Congresswoman Hageman has tackled since her arrival in Washington, D.C., a big one is the Endangered Species Act. There have been several congressional committees where she's gone after U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officials for their incompetence. Here's a soundbite of Harriet Hageman going after the director of the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. It becomes pretty clear early on that that bureaucrat has no idea what she's talking about or why she's even in that position. She just came from a state agency where she had a big title that had something to do with wildlife, and she was installed as the director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Here it is.
Director Williams, considering that the greater Yellowstone grizzly population has been fully recovered for over 20 years, and considering the growing threat to property owners, tourists, livestock owners, and recreationalists, will you support our effort to follow the science and finally delist the greater Yellowstone grizzly from the Endangered Species Act? Yes or no?
Woman Hageman, I look forward to applying the Endangered Species Act.
That's been done. Do you support delisting the grizzly bear?
Congresswoman Hageman, at the moment, we have approved a finding for the state of Wyoming and are undertaking a 12-month review process to address.
That's been done before.
That's required under the law that we do now. And I would add, as the director, previous director of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and I was chair of the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee, I have a tremendous relationship with Mr. Nesvik, have worked with him.
That isn't my question. What I'd really like to get back to is, do you support delisting the grizzly bear?
Congresswoman Hageman, I support delisting the grizzly bear if it is able to meet all five factors of the
It already has.
That includes adequate regulatory mechanisms, which Wyoming knows.
Okay, then let's go on to my next question. As we debated my bill to delist the greater Yellowstone grizzly in committee just a few weeks ago, I was surprised to learn that a common objection from the other side of the aisle was their perception of the inadequacy of Wyoming state management plan. When I responded by describing the success of Wyoming's management of the grizzly at the state level and the fact that we had invested $59 million in protecting the grizzly bear, I wasn't met with any objection because, as it turns out, none of the folks on the other side had read the plan and didn't know what they were objecting to. So my question for you is, Director Williams, what objections, if any, do you have to Wyoming's state management plan?
Congresswoman Hageman, that would be part of this 12-month
review. Well, do you have any objection to Wyoming's grizzly management plan? I mean, it's been out there for quite some time. It's been available to you. I assume that you've reviewed it. Am I correct or am I incorrect?
You are correct, and there is a piece of the Wyoming management plan which I have discussed with Mr. Nesvik.
What do you object to? What do you object to in the Wyoming grizzly management plan?
Congresswoman Hageman, one of the things we will review as required in the recovery plan for the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem is a recalibration issue for which we have been working closely with Wyoming and have a very strong working relationship.
So you don't have anything specific you can point to?
That's part of the reason for a review that's happening right now.
And isn't it true the Fish and Wildlife Service has previously approved the Wyoming grizzly management plan?
I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of, Congresswoman Hageman, of whether we approve or disapprove the grizzly bear management plan for the state of Wyoming. But we do work very closely with the state and very much appreciate Wyoming's
When will the 12-month review be finished?
We are working on that, and I don't have a date certain.
Well, you have to have a date certain. So then has it not started yet?
It has started, yes.
So then what would be 12 months from the date that it started?
Congresswoman Hageman, it's called a 12-month review.
Oh, but you don't meet the 12-month requirements of the Act. Is that your testimony?
Congresswoman Hageman, I did not say that. And it could be shorter or it could be longer to get this done correctly. The point that I care about coming from Montana and along with you and Mr. Nesvik is that we get this right. And that we have a defensible
My time has expired,
forward.
But thank you.
The species of the day is grizzly bears. Before then, it was wolves, and it's always sage grouse. Those three species have varying classifications as far as the Endangered Species Act goes. One of them is completely delisted, the gray wolf. One of them, the grizzly bear, is still inexplicably covered by the Endangered Species Act. And the last one, the sage grouse, is only considered threatened, but all three of them have the same thing in common. None of them are actually threatened or endangered. And all three of them are used to restrict the rights of law-abiding hunters in one way or another. Here's Representative Hageman proving that the bureaucrats in Washington have no idea what they're doing with Wyoming wildlife, specifically the grizzly bear. In this soundbite, Representative Hageman is educating, I guess we can call it that, the Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland.
Okay, do you know the recovery criteria for the Greater Yellowstone grizzly bear?
I'd be happy to get back with you with that specific answer, ma'am.
Well, it's roughly 600 to 700 is the recovery criteria. Do you know how many bears are currently living in the Greater Yellowstone recovery area?
I don't have the number of grizzly bears in front of me at the moment.
Were you aware then that there are over 1,100 grizzly bears in the Greater Yellowstone area?
I appreciate you sharing that information with me.
Yeah, right. I'm sure she does appreciate Representative Hageman providing her with that information. My main point here is that Deb Haaland has no idea what she's talking about, and here she is at a hearing specifically to talk about the Greater Yellowstone grizzly bear. Sage grouse are a little bit different. They're neither threatened or covered by the Endangered Species Act. Here's the only question that you have to ask someone that brings up the sage grouse. Why do they still issue hunting licenses for the sage grouse if they're that imperiled? The only possible response to that question is that the Wyoming Game and Fish doesn't have any idea what they're doing, and that, of course, is absurd. The Wyoming Game and Fish Department is the premier wildlife management agency in the entire country. The sage grouse is just used as a tool to restrict the development of oil, gas, and coal extraction. Though the Bureau of Land Management does claim that they hire biologists to investigate all of these oil and gas developments, really, the expertise of those individuals leaves something to be desired. The truth is that the most skilled wildlife biologists do not go to work for federal agencies. They'd much rather go to a state agency that's more specialized and actually knows what they're doing. And more broadly speaking, federal agencies do not hire skilled wildlife biologists because they tend to be focused on things that are provable, like science, and not like politics. The third major argument against hunting is more of a language thing, that trophy hunting is inherently evil. Trophy hunting is the catch-all phrase for conveying the totality of evil in the outdoors. Trophy hunting, in scare quotations, has become the animal rights movement's trump card. Research shows that hunting as a wildlife management tool enjoys broad support. When the qualifier trophy is put in front of it, however, that support plummets. The animal rights movement knows this, and in an effort to misrepresent the facts and stop hunting, has begun to attach that label to everything from predator management and African big game hunting to the use of hounds and even traditional game meat hunting for species like deer, elk, caribou, or the antelope. The truth is, given the opportunity, most hunters would take the gigantic elk rather than just shoot a spike. Even though antlers don't make very good soup, they look a heck of a lot better on the wall. Tree-hugging commie pinkos try to lead the public to believe that the average hunter just shoots for the head and then leaves the rest of the carcass behind for the predators to feast on. That couldn't be further from the truth. The vast majority of hunters are law-abiding citizens and take whatever meat that they harvest while they're hunting. Many of them, even if they don't want the meat, take it to a locker plant and donate it to the local food pantry. But there again, the easiest response to this trophy hunting nonsense is that leaving a carcass to rot is already against the law and literally falls under the definition of poaching. Think about it. No wildlife criminal in their right mind is going to leave their tag behind if they're just going to chop the head off an elk and leave the rest of it lay. That would be idiotic. When poaching cases are discovered, which happens way more often than the tree-hugging commie pinkos would lead you to believe, it is like an episode of CSI after the game and fish gets there. And believe it or not, they're remarkably effective at catching the offender. The term trophy hunting is just that. Another meaningless term that's been made up by animal rights activists. Trophy hunting is actually poaching, which of course is against the law and carries with it severe penalties. You might lose your guns, your truck, or you could even lose your home if convicted of poaching in the state of Wyoming. Taken in its totality, the anti-hunting movement really has a much larger purpose, and that is to restrict the Second Amendment. The left has erroneously been very effective at linking the Second Amendment to hunting, even though the Second Amendment has absolutely nothing to do with the sport. Under the guise of being nice to cute little animals, animal rights activists try to enact legislation to restrict your hunting rights to service a bigger effort of restricting your access, your legal access, to firearms. I've posted a link to the article I've been discussing in today's episode at cowboystatepolitics.com. It's important for you to understand the arguments behind this whole anti-hunting movement so that you can effectively argue against them, and so that you can continue to do what I'm going to do all next week. That'll about do it for today's installment of Weekend Update. The plan for next week is I'm going to replay a couple of great episodes from the program, one of which is going to be Fauci's Fiction. That's the interview with author Michael Schwartz. It's a fascinating discussion. And then I haven't quite decided what the other one is going to be. But I'll be back on the program for next week's Weekend Update. Don't forget to check out the Independence Network, where I have a live show every day of the week, Monday through Friday. To listen to my show and all of the great content from the Independence Network, go to the website, independencenetwork.us. Have a great rest of your weekend, and I'll see you when I get back, hopefully with a gigantic elk that the tree-hugging commie pinkos didn't prevent me from shooting. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.